This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Otema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program to my cool guests. My guest today is Mayumi Wejima Carr, who is the co-president of Table for Two USA, and also join our exciting guest, Josh Evan Shuraket, who is an instructor of the Washoku Iku program, which we're going to discuss later, and Alex de Ariano Sanborn, another Washoku Iku program coordinator. And Table for Two was first established in Japan in 2007, and it offers a unique charity program to provide school meals to children in need by improving diet of the adults. Their program is so popular that it has spread to 14 countries, including the U.S. And here's why. According to the Table for Two website, in the world we live in right now, 1 billion people suffer from hunger, while 1 billion suffer from obesity, diabetes, and other health issues related to overconsumption. In other words, Table for Two found a way to offset the two major problems. So today we'll discuss how Table for Two's program works, why their program is so effective, their unique campaigns to inspire our community, such as Onigiri Project, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher as a podcast. So please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Eats. Also, if you have any ideas about the topics of the show or show guests, please let us know, and you can email us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. Now let's start our conversation with Mayumi Wejima Carr, Alexis Ariano Sanborn, and Joshua Evan Shuraket. So welcome. So first of all, let's talk about your background, because I think we just want to know who you are. So Mayumi, where are you from, and why did you come to the States? Because I realized that you have a huge pharmaceutical background.
Hi, I'm Mayumi. So I'm originally from Tokyo, and I grew up there. And first time I came to the U.S. was like back 10 years ago. Mm. I went to a business school in Arizona. It's called Thunderbird. It was in a small town, but students are from over 150 countries. Mm. It's like a mini world. Uh-huh. I really enjoy, you know, living there, you know, working together with people from multicultural backgrounds. And I decided to pursue more like global career. And after the graduation, I joined a global pharmaceutical company. Mm. And actually, I went back to Japan. I worked for that office in Japan. And then actually, I met my husband, who is an American. And then we got married. And then after a few years, we decided to move back to the U.S. to pursue both of our careers.
Mm. Okay. So, and what about you, Alexis?
Hi, Akiko. It's great to be here. So my background, I'm from California originally, so I'm a transplant to the East Coast. I came originally here for graduate school and then moved to New York after that. So I've been in New York for about 4 years now. My background is in Japan and East Asian studies. It's what I've been studying since the age of 14. And food has always been something that I've been interested in. And so my connection to Japanese food has been sort of a natural progression from growing up in sort of an agricultural heartland in the Sacramento Valley, and just the connection to food, nature, and seasons. So Japanese culture has a lot of that in how they approach their own food and cooking, and being involved in the Washokuiku was sort of a natural progression.
Right, and then hopefully you're going to be back on another project. Your film about Japanese lunches.
Yes, that's right. So for the past several years or so, I've been studying about Japanese food education and food education law, and have been doing a lot of independent research. This is based off of the inspiration for this was based off of my own experience eating school lunch in a rural Japanese school. And, you know, maybe I'll hold that story for a later time, but it's really inspired my connection to helping to promote kids having a healthy, balanced, nutritionally balanced upbringing from very early on. Mm-hmm. And I was recently in Japan this past summer working on a documentary entitled Nourishing Japan, which looks at not only food education, but the people who help support this entire initiative.
Mm, okay. So hopefully sometime in months or maybe early next year, you'll come back.
I hope so. I'm working on the trailer right now. Okay. So I hope to be able to share it sometime soon.
Okay. So keep us posted. And what about you, Josh? You have a very interesting background too.
I don't know about that, but I grew up right here in New York. So it's been home my whole life. So the multicultural background, the sort of big, urban center has always been something that's been kind of in my family and in my life. So I guess the food thing starts there. And I think the Japan interest started there as well. And I've been sort of spending the rest of my life since then trying to take those two paths and sort of, put them together in different ways. So I did my culinary training many moons ago back at the CIA. Now I am a PhD candidate at Columbia working on Japanese food history. Mm. So that's the current project, and it's a real pleasure to be involved in the Washokuiku project as well. So, many, many thanks to Alexis and to Mayumi and to Deborah and everybody else involved for getting me in to be the New York instructor.
Great. So I'm hoping to have Josh again for future program too, so keep it posted.
Yes, I will come in and nerd out about Edo period food and health texts. It'll be great.
That, I think, is very foundational for Japanese cuisine. So
looking forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Table for Two USA, which is very interesting, later. But first of all, what is Table for Two? I mean, which originally started in Japan?
So Table for Two is a non-profit organization started in Japan. So it's expanded to like 14 countries. So it was like founded by some of the Japanese leaders, and there was a World Economic Forum. They have a Young Global Leaders Conference. So they are, leaders from all over the world. They discussed about global issues, what tech action they can take. And one of the group discussed about obesity and hunger issue. That's a big issue in the world. Mm. So the four Japanese leaders came up with this idea and then decided to implement. That's how it started.
Mm. Okay. And I mentioned briefly at the beginning of the show, but what is the core program at the Table for Two to achieve the mission?
So its mission is to tackle obesity and hunger issues. So there are 7 billion people in this world. But, 1 billion people having, hunger issue. And on the other hand, close to, 2 billion people have, obesity and they have other health issues, related to unhealthy eating, mm-hmm. sometimes eating too much. So we are trying to solve both issues at the same time. And how it works is pretty simple. So as the name said, Table for Two. So there's a dating site called Table for Two, but it's not a dating site. It's a lovely concept. So people are sharing a table. So Table for Two partner with any place selling food. Could be corporate cafeterias or food companies and restaurants. And they just designate healthy items as Table for Two meal or items. And then if you purchase that healthy item, just small portion, 25 cents in the US, 20 yen in the US, in Japan, will be donated to provide one school meal to a child in need.
Right. So it's a really calculatable, visible, one-to-one relationship. Mm-hmm. That's another key element. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in Japan, how does a table of food actually offer healthy food for adults? Like, you know, you have a meal developed for that healthy purposes, but then is it based on contracts with organizations which have cafeteria or products that anyone can buy at stores? Kind of.
So we partner with, you know, basically any place like selling food. So it could be we partner with corporate cafeterias or restaurants. So we have kind of application. It's like contract, you know, what meal will be the healthy meals, and then how much portion will be donated, and, you know, how long, and how to use a logo. That's kind of a simple, you know, contract we have.
Right. And actually, I saw on one of the websites, again, I was like reading blogs and stuff, and then one of the university students said, I was just eating this menu, which I, when I was not too hungry, I opted for that healthy meal. Mm-hmm. And I read about this table of two. Mm-hmm. The meal was provided by table of two, which he was not totally aware of. And he saw the cost, and he's always eating the meal table of two from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a kind of simple step, and it's a kind of win-win. You know, people eating table of two healthy meal, is that healthy, good for you? At the same time, you know, by just eating lunch, you can help one child.
Right. So, and you stay healthy. You get healthier.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I saw the website, for instance, in Japan, they have Itochu, IBM, Hitachi, Google, Mitsui, Seido, 3M, Nomura, Goldman Sachs, to name a few. Like, all those major companies joined Table for Two program. So, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. So. And then what kind of countries are accepting donations from Table for Two? Like, what kind of... what country is accepting?
So we support many countries to provide school meals. So some countries in East Africa, like Ethiopia, Rwanda, like Kenya, Tanzania, and also some of the Asian countries like Philippines and Myanmar, and also actually some of the, you know, even developed countries, we help some of the school meals.
So for corporations, you approach, right? And then ask for support. And then for countries, you go to the government, or how does it work?
So you mean to expand the table food?
Right.
So this is actually so amazing that we usually have like very motivated leaders in one country. They just, you know, heard about table food concept and just initiate this program. So so we partner with actually World Economic Forum, and so they do have like a wide, you know, global network. So at the conference, their global conference, some of the healthy school meals and healthy table for two meals are provided, and the people, you know, got to know about this, and then they went back to their own country, and then they just start table for two.
Okay. And the countries, for instance, someone who's listening to the program, I want school kids of a certain countries in Africa. We want to have the support. So they can come and talk to you, I mean, the table to Japan or the U.S. to ask for support. That's how it works?
So we have table food headquarters in Japan. Mm-hmm. So they, they can contact and then, you know, just discuss, like, what are the possibility, what kind of partnership we can do, and...
Okay, right. And also, if other companies want to support, they just come, go to the website, and then apply for support?
Yes. So we, you know, first talk and what kind of programs they can implement, like cafeteria or, you know, other ways. We have, like, vending machine programs and what works best. And then they decide, you know, how to implement, so we kind of work together.
So you just mentioned vending machines. So at the cafeteria, then vending machines, and what else? What kind of versions of the support can you offer?
So it's interesting part is it's very creative. So they can implement at cafeterias or restaurants. And also we have a program called, like, gift walk. This is like people walk, and then there's a iPhone apps that they can count how many steps the person walk. So if the person walk 10,000 steps, the company donate 10 cents. So it's like, you know, starting from, you know, food, but something, you know, if you exercise, doing something good for you, that can be also a table for the program. So I think interesting part is with the basic model, kind of, you know, you can be creative.
Well, maybe like gyms and whoever wants to support can join.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay. So all the details are at the website, on the website, tableforto.com. .org.
Tableforto.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. And I'm curious, what countries, you know, you said 14 countries are participating and donating.
Mm-hmm.
And so what countries except for, in addition to Japan and the U.S.?
Yeah, there are some countries in Europe like Germany, like Switzerland, Norway, like Italy, and Saudi Arabia, and some Asian countries like Hong Kong, like Australia, Vietnam. So it's been like spreading.
Wow, it's really global. Mm-hmm. Right. And how many meals have the Table for Two served to children so far?
So far, like 52 million meals. And so it's, you know, it's a small step, but adding up. And we support over 30,000 students, you know, every year to provide school meals.
Okay, so do you switch, rotate the countries, or do you just keep expanding?
Yes, sometimes we're trying to, you know, continue. And then sometimes, you know, if we raise, you know, when we raise more donation, and then we can support more schools and more like countries. And,
Okay. All right, so I want to talk a lot more about the USA. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the activities and Table for Two USA and the inspiring projects to educate American kids. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese Podcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Mayumi Uejima Card, who is a co-president of Table for Two USA, and also joined our Alexis Aliano Sambon, the Washoku Week program coordinator, which we're going to talk about later, and Josh Evan Shaket, who is an instructor of the Washoku Week program. So now, so when and how the Table for Two USA is founded?
It was founded back in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
We had a launch event at actually Columbia University in New York. So our expert advisor is Professor Jeffrey Sachs. So he gave a like lecture and also talk about Table for Two, and you know, a few hundred people got together, and that was launch event.
Right. Well, actually, the Jeffrey Sachs, the professor, who was the original person who inspired the founder of Table for Two USA, to Japan, right?
Yes, yes. You know, he gave the inspiration, and you know, he agreed to be an expert advisor, and he came to the launch event, so that was great.
Right. He's an economist and inspired this kind of interesting organization, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, and so do you have the same mission as Table for Two Japan?
So we do have same mission here in the U.S. to tackle obesity and hunger issue, but we have a few different programs and little different focus. So first of all, we support children in Africa, but also we support some students in the U.S. as well.
Mm.
So it's a developed countries, but hunger is like one of the main issues in the U.S.
Mm.
So it's, you know, one in six children, they're in hunger, they don't know when the next meal comes.
Right.
So we're trying to work on this issue, but we're not sure, you know, what we can do with 25 cents. And then what we find is that those schools in low-income communities, you know, they sometimes can't afford to have very healthy school meals. So we decide to, you know, help them to have healthier school meals with 25 cents. Mm. Healthy meal means with more, you know, using fresh, you know, vegetables and fruits and freshly made every day and no additives. So we help that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's ironic that people tend, who doesn't have much money tend to have more processed food because it's mass made and it's totally not nutritional.
Right. So. That's, you know, first we study hunger and obesity. We, you know, think about different population, but it's kind of like, correlated. Mm. So in the, you know, community who are suffering from hunger, they kind of, they tend to suffer from the other health issues like obesity, diabetes as well.
Mm. Right. So diabetes is really becoming serious for young kids too. So it's really important. Mm-hmm. Right. And what kind of... you know, the communities, are you talking about New York City communities right now?
Yeah, we support schools in New York community and also New Jersey and D.C. and some of the schools in California. So so our partner organization, they want to support some of the schools in the, their local neighborhood. So that's how we, you know, finding schools and start supporting.
Okay, so what the, you know, that the school... American School Initiative started because of the request from the companies that you work with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually many corporations in the U.S., they want to support local schools, but that's kind of their customers are looking for. For example, we partner with nationwide sushi chain like Genji Sushi, so they do have operation all over in the U.S., and they launch like healthy bento. And then just 25 cents from the proceeds will be donated to Table for Two. But they want to support local schools. That's actually many customers, especially health-conscious customers, are very socially conscious, and they really appreciate that kind of, you know, company's effort.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So so what's let's talk about, you know, actual programs in this country. So Alexis and... Josh, what's your responsibility, respectively, at the Table for Two?
Yeah, so I am the program coordinator of New York City for the Washoe Gwiku Project, which is a new initiative from Table for Two that was launched last year. And so I'm kind of involved in a lot of the operational and administrative sides to getting a program up and running. So I help with... a variety of writing assignments, but also helping to find schools, learning about navigating the requirements required by the Department of Education, and working with the team generally to help create the curriculum and find enthusiastic teachers and volunteers who want to implement it.
Okay. And Josh?
Well, I'm the lucky one who gets to be in the classroom with the students. So it's been a really great pleasure to be right there and hands-on and be able to kind of implement these courses that we've all designed together and that, you know, the students really seem to be responding to. So we, of course, have sites in Boston and D.C. as well. But for New York, you know, along with a really great team of volunteers, I help the students work through the program and learn about Japanese food and learn about food education. And
okay, so that's the Washokuik program. And then I think before that, we should talk about the Onigiri project, because the Washokuik project is based on the success of Onigiri project, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about it quickly. Quickly, or just as much time as you want to take, because it's so interesting.
Yeah.
So
we've been having like unique project. It's called Change the World with Onigiri Rice Bowl. So we just started this year. So so every fall, World Food Day is October 16th. Around day, over 100 countries celebrate this day to increase the awareness of food-related issues. So Table for Two always do campaign around this time. So in 2015, we started this unique program. So we chose onigiri. Rice bowl is like made from rice and inside, you know, anything, you know, tuna mayonnaise or plum. And it's like Japanese love to eat that all the time. So how it works is pretty simple. You just eat or make onigiri and take photo and just upload to the campaign website or your social media with hashtag onigiri action. And then actually our sponsor company will donate five school meals Sapporo.
Mm, wow.
So it's a kind of global campaign. Anybody in the world can, you know, make onigiri. Rice is available anywhere and just, you know, take a photo and you can provide school meals.
Mm, so you can purchase or you can make your own, then mm-hmm. take a picture and mm-hmm. 5 meals donated. Mm-hmm. Great. And then the campaign is running from October 5th through November 15th,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. Yeah. So again, hashtag?
Hashtag onigiri action. Onigiri is O-N. I-G-I-R-I.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, you mentioned it briefly, but, you know, let's talk about the onigiri. So, what is special? Like, it could have been sandwiches or something else, right? Mm-hmm.
So, if you go to Japan, you might see everybody's eating onigiri all the time. If you go to a convenience store, you know, you see 30 different kinds of onigiri. So, this is kind of like, you know, many people have memory. Usually, like, parents make for their kids, grandparents make for their grandchildren. It's like a symbol of love.
Mm.
And so sushi is so famous, but onigiri is kind of like soul food for Japanese.
Right.
And so Table for Two is a non-profit study in Japan. We wanted to have some, you know, Japanese theme. Also, you know, we want many people to, you know, think about the children who need help. So that's why we chose this, you know, onigiri for this campaign, like symbol.
Mm, right. What about there's a disaster? I mean, first thing people donate as food is onigiri in Japan. So that really symbolizes everything about.
Yeah, you know, something you feel like warm. You know, you might have some memory around.
Yeah,
onigiri.
It's like, you know, it's just running through my head right now.
Yeah. So that's why we introduced onigiri here in the U.S. and other countries. But, you know, first time they make it, they try it, but they love. It's just, I don't know, onigiri have some power, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. Yeah, energy put into food that goes through your body, so it's important culturally. Anyway, and so again, so this onigiri campaign was so successful that there's a new program called the Washokuiku Project. So what is Washokuiku Project?
Okay, so what is Washokuiku Project, a new food education program? So we teach healthy Japanese food and its culture. So washokuiku is a combination of the word washoku, Japanese food, and shokuiku, like food education.
Mm.
So in Japan, like food education is very big. So we kind of got inspiration from the Japanese style food education.
Mm. Okay. And why is Japanese food effective to educate children about healthy eating?
So I'll take that question. Japanese culture right now is amazingly popular with young kids. I mean, compared to when I was growing up, when I was first becoming interested in Japan, a lot of the pop culture things like anime and manga, and even eating Japanese food, it was so difficult. It wasn't something that was necessarily mainstream, but within the past 10 to 15 years, it's just really taken off. And the children and the youth, you know, they know a lot about Japan through watching anime and reading manga. And sushi, you can find it at convenience stores. It may not be very good, but you can find Japanese food so much more easily. However, a lot of the things that kids are most aware of when it comes to Japanese food is sort of these more popular sort of street dish items like ramen and, you know, kind of fast and simple sushi, American-style sushi. And so, but that interest for Japan and Japanese food is there. And so tapping into that, basically, you know, we want... It's a jumping off point. They already have this interest. And so by pushing them a little bit more to try something new, to try something different, to allow them to dig a little bit deeper into a culture that they're already interested in is really what we think that is its most effective way that we can get children excited about this program because the interest already exists there.
Mm, right.
Absolutely. And when you combine that with food that is just, you know, in many ways, calorie for calorie, more healthy than what they're eating, you know, in a normal cafeteria environment, you know, we get a real chance to take that kind of cultural curiosity and that new way that, you know, young people are able to interact with Japan in a way that I think was not, you know, the same when I was growing up, certainly. And then take that sort of fundamental healthfulness and put those things together to create a program that's really beneficial to them.
Mm, interesting.
And just to sort of jump off of that, I think that there's, even in young kids nowadays, there's there's more of an interest in cooking than there was when we were a bit younger. Absolutely. And the thing about Japanese food, you know, I'm not Japanese. I was raised Italian American. I taught myself to cook Japanese food. And the thing about it is, once you've kind of mastered the sort of basic ingredients and seasonings, it's applicable to pretty much any type of vegetable or meat. It's really, you know, it's the aesthetics and it's the flavorings that make it, but it's not something, I think it seems maybe a lot more exotic than it actually is, but homestyle Japanese cooking is really something that is something that anyone can do once they've learned the basic skills. And I think that's what we're trying to teach in the Washokiku program, amongst other things. But as this program, Japan Eats, is about demystifying Japanese food culture, so is Washokuiku as well.
Right. Interesting. So, yeah, and then, like you said, Alexis, you know, the sushi is now, like, everybody, every kid know. Maybe 30 years ago, like, why do you eat raw fish? That kind of thing. So it's the things are changing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, people talk about, like, should we be vegetarian, vegan? But if you're Japanese, like, three days a week, maybe you're vegetarian, right? It's kind of way you eat is, it's a lot of vegetables. You can have tofu and you can, you know, pescatarian. It's like crazy. Without knowing it, you are eating healthy.
Right.
Because I think the country has been poor for a long time and we learned how to balance the food too.
Yeah, so. I think there are a lot of technique that, you know, people can eat vegetable in a kind of tasty way, in a fun way. So I think
right. It's
good.
And because it's based on seasons, I think. So, okay. And so, the originally documentary filmmaker Atsuko Quirk joined me on episode 90 and talked about Japanese school lunch program. And I was very impressed at how things work. But for listeners who are not familiar with Japanese school lunch system, how do you describe the difference between Japanese shokuiku and existing school lunch programs in the U.S.?
The difference between Japan and America is pretty much night and day. And as someone who studies this, trying to explain it to a lot of Americans, it's difficult for them to comprehend at first. But basically, you know, first things first, in 2005, the government passed a law that there was going to be food education in all schools in Japan. So, you know, the government is behind teaching children more about the food, where it comes from, and making sure that what they're eating is much more nutritionally balanced. So that's, you know, the playing field is very much very different, I think, than the United States in that respect. And then as far as, you know, day to day, if you went to a Japanese school, the differences are that for the most part, meals are made fresh every day. Either it's in an offsite location or it's in the schools, and the ingredients are, you know, you have potatoes that are whole and you peel off the skin. So you're talking about whole foods. And these are used to make a meal fresh. And then the meals themselves are picked up and distributed by the children and brought to their classrooms. So for a lot of schools, not all, but a lot of schools don't have cafeterias, and they eat the lunch together communally in the room, and the homeroom teacher supervises the lunchtime activities, and the children themselves actually distribute the food amongst their classmates. So, like, the school lunch ladies are the women or the men in the kitchen working, but then the actual distribution part comes from the children. So there's a lot of important lessons that they learn in this daily distribution process, such as responsibility and hand-eye coordination and treating everyone fairly. So, you know, the meals that they eat, how they eat them, are all quite different, and it's supported by the government to continue to be defined and refined and improved upon.
Right. Yeah, I still have strong memories about Japanese school lunches. That was very educational, and it's kind of very social, and you learn how to eat, not at the table by itself, but how you interact with other people, how you say thank you to lunch ladies, and, you know, friends who's in charge of distributing food today.
Yeah, and it's not really allowed to leave food. You know, you have to eat. It's the world called Multinai. And then, but here in the U.S., the time is really limited. So if they want to finish, but they don't have enough time. So I think there's some big difference. Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, instilling that set of habits, I think, is another important aspect of what we're trying to do with the Washokuiku project. You know, as you can sort of get from the, you know, dual nature of the name of the program itself, you know, we're looking at, you know, creating an awareness of Japanese food culture and food, you know, ingredients and sort of healthy eating through those specific kinds of intake. But we're also interested in those kind of habits of healthy eating that you can bring back that create a knock-on effect in your life, right? That are able to you know, bring not only the sort of types of thankfulness that we talked about briefly before, but also, you know, ideally using those ingredients that you can get your hands on here in the States with some of those simple flavors to, you know, really be able to create these things on your own and to be able to sort of change your food lifestyle a little bit in a way that is not just, you know, about the sort of boundaries of the lunch itself.
Right. Okay. So, but by the way, how did you guys come up with this, the Washokuiku program?
So, as I mentioned, like, Table Food to support some of the schools in the U.S. to have healthier school meals. So, like, sometimes, you know, I visit the school, and then when I ask the student, what do you think about the healthy meal? And I got very honest feedback, you know, like, why you change this? I just want pizza and chocolate milk. And I was shocked, but at the same time, it's like, oh, maybe just providing, you know, healthy meals, maybe not enough. They have to understand why they have to eat healthy, you know, what the benefits. And then, so we kind of started to research about food education in Australia, in the U.S., and we just found out it's opportunities are very limited. So there's, you know, some portion, it's not, priority is not that high. So, and just the, we realized the need of the food education. And then through the onigiri action, we've done many onigiri and obento workshop and realized kids to adults here in the U.S., very interested in learning about, you know, Japanese food. And then I thought this is a great angle to, you know, teach, make the students to be interested in food. So we, you know, then I got this idea and found a team members like Alexis Josh and also Deborah Samuel, who is a cookbook author. She's developing the curriculum, and Boston University professor Mary White. So we got a great team and could launch this.
Right. And I heard that you had the first pilot program in New York City and you are now gradually expanding the program. So when and where did it happen? The pilot program happened, and how did it go?
Well, we had our first pilot program, a three-session program out of seven sessions that we have planned for the full program. We held it in the New York site. We held it at the Community Health Academy of the Heights up in Harlem, and it was really a wonderful experience. We were able to cooperate with their after-school programs in which they already have a cooking ambassadors program, they call it, in place to, you know, give students a sense of, you know, how kitchens work and how basic cooking skills work. But food, obviously, that's very different than the kinds of things that we're trying to accomplish with the Washokuiku project. So we were able to work with them and to bring Japanese food into those classrooms for the first time. And of course, to bring in the kinds of senses of ownership over your health and the you know, different sort of cultural education programs that we were interested in as well. So we had three sessions. The first one was on rice-based foods, another on foods from the sea, and then a third on bento arrangements. And all three of those will, you know, be featured in the full program as well, but we picked those out to be the kind of beginnings of the pilot as well.
Right. Sounds fun, especially bento arrangement. It's kind of interesting, fun project for them too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, all of the meals are served in a bento. One of the sort of ways that we instill this sense of interest and ownership in your diet and in your health is by giving every student their own bento at the beginning of the class that they are responsible for cleaning and packing, and then every meal that we make is served in the bento. But that session that we highlight the bento specifically is a real opportunity to get a sense of not only the background of how you know, parents make bentos for their children and how, you know, the sort of ubiquitous bento box that's, you know, all over the place in you know, whether it's in, you know, a convenience store, whether it's coming from home, whether you're making it yourself. Mm. So getting that sort of sensibility, but also sort of understanding, you know, play of different colors and play of different sort of nutritional elements and trying to put those all together in a way that makes sense and is fun for the kids, too.
Mm. That's very fundamental because, you know, like you said, colors, five mm-hmm. colors. Mm-hmm. I suppose you have five colors, your nutrition in the box is balanced. So
absolutely.
That kind of thing.
Right. So that's one of the aspects of our lesson. And we have a slide that, you know, we put up and talk about every session, how those colors are sort of appearing in the bento that we make in that particular day. Mm. So we try to really bring those lessons into the plan as well.
Right. So what were the reactions of the kids? They're happy and enjoy the food they made?
They loved it. I was really impressed with their willingness to try new things. Mm. You know, students everywhere, kids everywhere have likes and dislikes. It's true in Japan as well. But the sense of adventurousness was something that I was pleasantly surprised by.
Mm.
You know, in the sense that they're having this sort of double exposure, both to, you know, new foods that they've never tried before and new ingredients they've never tried before, you know, it was a new way to sort of change the frame entirely of what they think they like and they don't like. So some of the foods that, you know, that appear and stuff like, you know, the broccoli, maybe they took a minute or two to get used to, but, you know, we had, you know, sort of many different kinds of seaweed that we introduced during the Foods from the Sea session. And by the end, we had kids asking for more nori and asking for more ingredients that they never tried before. So in some ways, the unfamiliarity actually bred this really interesting sort of creativity and willingness to try through new things.
Mm. So the program, you said it's the after-school program?
Yes, at the moment. So we're cooperating with the after-school program in this particular school.
Right.
So the students are sort of involved with it through that.
Mm. So kid can opt in for the program or everybody has to participate once at school?
In this case, for New York, we partnered with an existing sort of after-school program that
okay.
was there. In our other schools in Boston and D.C., the format was a little different. So we're trying to create a program that has flexibility and that meets the either the freedom or the limitations of each of the schools.
Right.
But, you know, as long as the school's enthusiastic, we try to work to make this program a reality in whatever shape or form it ends up happening.
But how do you choose the partnering schools?
So we have some, you know, we set the school selection criteria, so for the pilot. And we, through this table for two work, we already have kind of existing network with schools.
Mm.
So we choose from that. And then, but kind of we are open to, we would like to expand to more schools, and we just confirm that it could, you know, benefit to so many, you know, type of schools and community organizations.
Okay. And who's sponsoring the Washoku program?
So first we got a grant from US Japan Foundation to develop this program and implement pilot program. And also more foundation like SMBC Global Foundation and CHOC and some other Japanese like food companies like Nishiki Rice or Georgia's, they've been sponsoring this program. So we could provide this program for free to the schools. And we are hoping to raise more funds and to expand this program.
Mm, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, and then you're going to plan to expand throughout the country with this program? Mm.
Yes, now we established a program and then we have a training plan, like lesson plans. We have all kinds of materials. So if we have instructors like Josh and we can start the program, and of course we need some funding, you know, for the operation, but then possibly we can do, you know, anywhere.
Mm, great. Okay. And speaking about what kind of age group of kids are you talking about to participate in the program?
Well, in the New York site, we had our students were mostly upper middle school and lower high school students.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, very flexible. And I think that depends very much on the site. And, you know, we'd be open to expanding those as well.
Mm.
Yeah, but in D.C., actually, we did like first and second grader and fifth grader, too. Actually, we found it the same program can, you know, apply to like any like, kind of grade. You know, of course, what they can do, the amount might be limited, but the content itself we can use from very young students to high school students actually even adults request to take this program too.
Interesting. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Yeah. Right. And even we had a guest from CIA, your alma mater. They just started formal Japanese culinary program as well. So from the first grade to CIA, you can have Japanese formal education.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So so where can we find the details of the Washokui program?
So you can go to our website, which is washokuiku.org, and that's washokuiku.org.
Washokuiku.
Washokuiku, yeah. And so our entire, there's pictures up there from our pilot programs. We have details about what the objectives of the program are. You can meet our staff and our advisors. There's a lot of information there, and hopefully we'll have a little video that highlights our what we've been up to soon, but that might be in a ways in the future still. Mm,
okay, so I'll put the link to Washokuiku and the Table for Food to the USA on the show page. It's just where can we find more info to support the Table for Two and Table for Two USA in addition to the Washokuiku program?
Yes, we have a website for the Table for Two. So for the Table for Two USA, it's usa.tableforto, two is number two, .org. So for the other countries, we have like www.tableforto.org.
Mm-hmm. And there's a slash where. I found the tab where, and you can see the whole everywhere.
Right, you see the map, world map, right? Where we are.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So, okay, and what's your plan for the future? I mean, the Table for Two USA, and what about who you guys want to dream about?
Well, I definitely think that we want to continue to expand in schools in New York, Boston, and D.C., we're going to be doing that and continuing to find more partner schools as well. So that's I think is first and foremost.
So we're planning to develop like online program to available for more people. So that's our next goal. And as a Table for Two, we have kind of simple program. So with a small step, you can make a big difference. Like online, we want to use like technology ID, maybe partner with like meal delivering service like Uber Eats. We can make a big impact with this simple model. And also, I think we have kind of fun program, Washokuiku, like Onigiri Action. Just, I think to, solve this world, big issues, I think all the people participating should have fun as well. So we want to continue like fun and creative programs.
Right. Yeah, this is amazing. And also, I think I'm impressed at how Table for Two USA is kind of localized and then really advanced the efforts, which is very interesting. So, yeah, good luck and then keep me posted.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, and thank you for joining us today. You're so busy, so.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to be here.
So, please come back.
Thanks.
All three of you have plans to come back, so.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japanese is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes and Stitcher podcast. And engineer, it's David Tassiore, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.